Have you ever noticed that when you try to accomplish a task and you focus more and more, it sometimes gets harder to accomplish, or that you have some of your best breakthroughs when you're spacing out a little?
Our next guest says that sometimes the key to new insights, getting creative, or getting mentally unstuck is to let your mind wander or get distracted.
Dr. Srini Pillai joins us now. He's a neuroscientist and the author of the new book, Tinker, Dabble, Doodle, Try, Unlock the Power of the Unfocused Mind. Srini, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me, Veronica. Appreciate it.
Well, you start your book telling the story of a night ride. There's a scientist in the car. He's a little sleepy. His girlfriend's nodding off, and he's kind of free associating, and doing so, he comes up with something new. Can you tell us that story and how that's an example of what you're talking about?
Sure. The book starts with the story of Carrie Banks Mullis, who's a biochemist who discovered polymerase chain reaction, or PCR, which is a way of actually just replicating sort of genes. And it's really influenced all of modern biology in a very significant way. And that story is a story of his driving from Berkeley to Mendocino, you know, essentially not necessarily focusing on anything. And then all of a sudden, his mind starts creating these lurid blue and pink images, and he starts putting two and two together, and it's in the state of unfocus that he's able to come up and with this eureka experience that leads to his big discovery, which eventually led to his getting the Nobel Prize. And the reason I started the book with that story is I wanted to just emphasize how a lot of times some of our greatest moments come at times of unfocus. Yet so many people today live such pressured lives with back-to-back scheduling that there's no time for this unfocus in their lives. It's usually focus, 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 fatigue. And if they are unfocused, then they're just completely lost to the world. And what I wanted to say was that sometimes it's really valuable to build unfocus into the middle of your day or even close to the beginning of your day. And in the case of Carrie Banks Mullis, that was something that actually paid off.
And your own story is a case in point here, especially if you go back to the days when you were a student and you were one of those focus, focus, focus guys, and then it all kind of fell apart. What happened?
Yeah, it did. So, you know, when you focus excessively, what happens is it drains on what we call the prefrontal cortex or the thinking brain. And as a result of that, all of that energy is actually wasted, and you're not really able to concentrate and retain memories. So certainly early on in medical school, in my second year when I was learning sort of how to memorize bones and nerves and arteries, I actually found myself studying sort of, you know, for many, many, many hours. And despite the fact that I was studying so hard, I wasn't getting the results that I wanted. And so I started to build unfocus into my day. I started to do things like work for 45 minutes and take 15-minute breaks. I started to take naps when I needed them. At that point, I even started a meditation practice against my will. Someone had mentioned it to me, and I thought, oh, this sounds sort of crazy. But then someone said, well, you know, if you're a scientist, why don't you try it out and see if it works? So I said, okay, I'll try that out. And little by little, I started to change my lifestyle so that there were unfocused elements built into my day. And I deliberately took time off on certain weekends just to completely let go of this intensity of working. And paradoxically, building unfocus into my day really escalated my results. And so I was, you know, able to get to the top of the class and stay there with those results. Although I'll have to say that when I went into my residency at Harvard, I made the same mistake. You know, I wanted to do really well, so I worked really hard and I stayed in the units all day. And when I got my first bit of feedback, they called me in and they said, listen, we love what you're doing. Your knowledge base is obviously ahead of everybody else, but we're really worried about you. And that really caught me off guard because I thought, you know, what are you worried about? I've been here every day. I go to every class. And they said, well, that's precisely the problem. We don't see you going off to the pond in the summer. We don't see you sitting on the park benches. And the whole point about Harvard is that we're here to help you cultivate your mind, not to make you into a memory machine. And so that really was something that changed. That particular phraseology was something that changed my thinking about this, because I recognized that so many people spend so much of their time just doing things and working like machines and in automated mode. And in a modern world where, you know, to tell the truth, logic and automation is becoming a commodity, robots are actually taking over a lot of jobs, we actually need to learn how to tap into our deepest authenticity and our humanity, and the unfocused, turning on the unfocused circuits in the brain is what will do that.
Well, I think that in our society, as you were saying, it seems like a virtue to focus and try to gain laser-like, you know, undisturbable focus, and that those periods that you're talking about, sitting on a bench, listening to music, that fallow time seems, in a way, time wasted. So why are you saying that this is, in a way, the most fertile time?
Well, for a lot of different reasons. Firstly, I want to emphasize that it's not about only unfocusing, and I'm certainly not suggesting distraction. I think that focus is an essential competency. I think without focus, it's very hard to stay on task. It's very hard to get stuff done. The reason I wrote the book on unfocus is that people are aware of focus, but they're overdoing it with focus. They're not really building in unfocused times. And so if you think about some of the disadvantages of focus, there are a few. So the first is, you know, there was one study, for example, that where they took two groups of people and they had them look, they had them look at videos, and they had one group focus intensely on the video and they had the other group just look at the video as usual. And after that, they gave them a moral dilemma in which they had to save some people. And they found that the people who were in the focus group had no interest in participating, whereas the people in the unfocused group were actually interested in participating and helping people out. And then when they fed the people in the focus group glucose, they started to become more interested in helping out, indicating that it was not that they were intrinsically negative or intrinsically unhelpful, but that focus depletes your brain so much that by the end of the day, you don't really want to listen to anybody else's problems or even think about anybody else's problems. So one big disadvantage of over-focusing is draining your thinking brain and losing a sense of empathy. I think another example that I talk about in the book is the idea that focus can actually make you lose sight of what's going on in the periphery. So some businesses have actually lost out to competitors, and they've lost out on developing products because they've been too focused. You know, Rosabeth Moss Kanter, who's at Harvard Business School, has pointed out there was a point at which Gillette had a toothbrush division, and they had a battery division, and they worked incredibly well, and their profits were increasing, and they were doing really well, but they were late to the market with electric toothbrushes because no one had unfocused from those very focused divisions within the company. So focus does have a downside, and if we're not aware of that, you know, even in the simple example of dating someone, you know, if you've got just your nose, sort of your head buried in the sand, and you're dating someone, you don't notice that they're displeased, or you don't notice that other people are taking notice of them, you could easily lose someone as well. So it's not just in complex business operations, but in our day-to-day lives, I think we need to reawaken unfocus, and we need to recognize that focus on its own doesn't really cut it.
We're speaking with Dr. Srini Pillay right now. He's a neuroscientist and the author of the new book, Tinker, Dabble, Doodle, Try, Unlock the Power of the Unfocused Mind. And Dr. Pillay, what happens in the unfocused mind that's so special? I know you say it acts as a bridge and helps the others be more efficient, but what's actually happening in the brain?
Well, I'll use a metaphor. So when you're focused, then in your brain, focus acts a little bit like a fork. So the parts of you that show up are all the very sort of concrete parts of you, you know, whether you think you're male or female, or whether you think you are, you know, what your age is or what your specific work is. These are all the very concrete and obvious parts of yourself. But when you unfocus, your brain metaphorically calls for other silverware. It calls for a spoon so that it can pick up all the delicious melange of flavors of your identity. So all of a sudden, as part of your identity circuits, as part of the self that is showing up to your everyday work, you have the scent of your grandmother. And then there are chopsticks, which are making connections, as I said, across the brain, thereby allowing you to see how you can come up with more innovative and creative ideas. And then there are things like that are equivalent to marrow spoons, which go into the nooks and crannies and are able to pick out memories that focus would never be able to pick out. So you look at situation A, where you only have focus, and the you that shows up to your day is the you with all the concrete parts of yourself. But when you have unfocus, it stimulates the brain circuitry so that the part of yourself that shows up is this complex part with many more puzzle pieces, and as a result, you feel more coherent, more aligned, and more engaged with your work. And at a functional level, what the unfocused circuits are doing is they're not only increasing your ability to feel present, They are also doing a number of other things. One of the other things they do is something we call mentalizing. And simply what that means is something like mind reading. So in order to understand and anticipate what other people are feeling, our brains are wired to try to anticipate what that is. And so in an unfocused state, one can actually be much better prepared to understand what that is. In addition to that, the brain also starts acting as a predictor organ. In fact, in many scientific articles, people refer to this as the brain becoming a crystal ball. So people like Ray Kurzweil, for example, futurists, investors who are very good at coming at up with things over and over again, are able to tap into this unfocused circuit to activate this prediction circuitry. And then there's innovation or making connections. So prediction, innovation, picking up old memories, accentuating a sense of self, these are all really important faculties that a lot of people don't tap into because they don't build unfocused times into their day.
We're speaking right now with Dr. Srini Pillai. He's a neuroscientist and the author of the new book, Tinker, Dabble, Doodle, Try, Unlock the Power of the Unfocused Mind. And he's with us now to talk about the book and how we can get more creative or get more work done on difficult problems by focusing less.
You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you do this? Do you build in some unstructured time into your otherwise busy day? Does it help you? Does it help you solve problems? Have you done this in school, in college, at work, you name it? Do you have questions about how this works? And are there specific things you do to take that unfocused time, maybe actually literally doodling, for example, or tinkering with something, and then ideas come to you? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll pick up our conversation in just a bit. Stay with us on Central Time.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. And we're talking with Dr. Srini Pillai about how doing seemingly mindless tasks like going for a walk, listening to music, doodling can actually be good for the brain and make you more productive and creative. He has a new book out right now. It's called Tinker, Dabble, Doodle, Try, Unlock the Power of the Unfocused Mind.
You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Is this something you do? Do you build in this unfocused time in your workday, in your school day? Does it help you? How does it help you? What do you come up with? And do you have questions about how to actually put this into practice? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we'll take our first phone call right now. We have Galen on the line in Duluth, Minnesota. Galen, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
Good.
What did you want to share?
Well, I was just sharing that I'm a musician, so I write songs and sing them. And a lot of the songs that I write, at least the first verse or the chorus, will come to me in a really unstructured time, like in the shower or taking a nap or riding in a car. And so I definitely think all sorts of creative problems are solved that way. So I just think it's interesting that you're talking about that for science, because I think it applies to arts, especially.
Right. Galen, thank you for that. And that's something you agree with, Dr. Pillai. You see a lot of parallels in music and the brain works. Can you talk about some of those?
Absolutely. Yeah, but thanks so much for sharing that, Galen. Yeah, I think the musical process does involve a combination of focus and unfocus, and I think a lot of spontaneous ideas and original ideas come from a combination of thoughts that occur when you are in the shower or you're daydreaming in a particular way or doodling. Really, in any of those particular states, you activate this unfocused network and original ideas are recombined, coming up with something that is new. And so musical thought, I think, is a great example of that. I think another context in which this occurs in music is with jazz musicians, because a lot of time people sort of think not just about the musical composition, but they think, you know, how is it that jazz musicians can anticipate what the next person is going to be playing? And with jazz musicians, it's this prediction circuitry that gets activated, and it gets activated because you have to move between focusing on what you're playing and then unfocusing enough to be able to predict what the next musician is going to be playing.
How can we simulate that in our own daily lives, that we get comfortable toggling back and forth between those two kind of brain functions and states?
Well, in a number of different ways. You know, to make this easier, you know, for a particular period for this book, I'm actually also offering an app called the Tinker Table, and this is a free app that comes along with the book, which actually allows you to automatically schedule in one of the techniques or more of the techniques in the book that will help you automatically protect time for as long as you want, for as many days as you want. So to help you do that automatically, I think the app is great. I also think there's a quick start guide that helps you figure out when in your day you might want to actually schedule one of these things in. But just to get into it a little bit more detail, what is one of those things that you could be doing to toggle back and forth? Well, let's talk about daydreaming. So for the longest time, Matthew Killingsworth and his colleagues have found that daydreaming in general is not that helpful. When you slip into a daydream, it's a little like falling off a cliff. It's actually, it's not helpful. When you have daydreaming that involves constant rumination, where you're thinking about maybe a few indiscretions because you've had a few more drinks than you wanted to the night before, that's also not helpful. But there is a type of daydreaming studied by Jerome Singer since the 1950s called positive constructive daydreaming. And there are three things only that you need to remember to initiate this kind of daydreaming so that it increases your creativity. So if, for example, you're wanting to compose some music but you feel like you're a little stuck, or you're writing and you're having some writer's block, you can schedule 15 minutes. The first thing is schedule it in deliberately. Secondly, do it when you are doing something low-key, like gardening or like surfing the net, so that it doesn't require a ton of different, it doesn't require a ton of effort. Or you can be knitting in your office. So anything that's a low-key activity, because studies have shown that if you're doing something intensely engaged, obviously it's hard to daydream, but also if you're doing nothing, it's not as effective as when you're doing something that's low-key. And then the third thing that Jerome Singer said was, when you're starting this daydream, it's going to be hard for you to actually remove your perception on what you're focusing on, your email or your computer or anything outside of you, and move this perception inward. And the way you initiate this is you use what he called a playful or wishful image. So you can think of yourself lying on a yacht, or you can think of yourself running through the woods with a dog, or you can think of yourself going for a walk. Whatever it is you're thinking about, it needs to be playful or wishful. And so planning it, doing it playfully or wishfully, and then allowing your perception to turn inwards during a low-key activity will get you into this PCD, or positive constructive daydreaming state. Now, a lot of people say, you know, it's hard to stay in the daydream. Sometimes you feel a little scared that your mind is just wandering and it's just like something on the loose. But what brain studies have shown is that the brain's guiding apparatus, the lateral prefrontal cortex, is actually there guiding your wandering mind toward things that are actually of relevance and significance to you. So even though on the outside or on the surface it may seem like your mind is just randomly creating images, it's actually very difficult for your mind to be that random or chaotic. Your brain will guide it towards things of relevance. And so I would suggest that, number one, positive constructive daydreaming is a great way to actually lose yourself in the interior spaces of your mind. I think another technique is doodling. So studies have shown that doodling can improve memory by 29%, which, you know, sounds counterintuitive because everybody's always telling kids at school, you know, stop doing that, pay attention. But now we know that when you doodle, what you're doing is two things. You are actually keeping your mind circling in a particular area so that it's not wandering too far away. And the second thing that you're doing is you're activating your unconscious so that there are many more mechanisms that can actually absorb memory that come to the fore. It's a little bit like, you know, a sponge that is loose is able to absorb things more effectively, whereas a sponge that is tight, it's very hard to absorb things with a sponge like that.
We're talking right now with Dr. Srini Pillay, neuroscientist and author of Tinker, Dabble, Doodle, Try, Unlock the Power of the Unfocused Mind. And Galen, thank you for that call and for bringing up music. And let's take another call now from Eric at Cuba City High School. Eric, hi.
Hi, how's it going?
Good, thanks.
I had a question. I'm a teacher at Cuba City High School, and I'm wondering for my high school students, how frequently should I have something like this built into my curriculum? How frequently should I give them that break, and for how long?
Eric, thanks. And what do you think, Dr. Pillay?
So I don't think we have any definitive research in this, and I would suggest trying out different methods that are in the Quick Start Guide. But as a general idea, I think what I would do is identify when you see the biggest slumps. And I think most people would say mid-morning, directly after lunch, and then mid-afternoon. And so if you think of those three times, if you build in periods of approximately 10 to 15 minutes, you can actually really rejuvenate the brain significantly with particular goals in mind. So, for example, if you just want them to be clearer so that they're able to attend and they're able to focus more effectively, 10 minutes of napping can be effective. But if you want them to work in a creative project, then studies show that 90 minutes of napping is actually much more effective. So I would say approximately three times a day, 10 to 15 minutes. But if you want to actually initiate a full-scale, you know, creativity idea, then building that into their schedule for about 90 minutes seems like a risk, but it'll probably get them going. I will say that as part of the book, I actually visited a school called Brightworks in San Francisco, which has a summer tinkering school. And they're quite remarkable because they don't, this is a school I think my parents would never have sent me to. They don't do any focused math or any language skills. But by the fifth grade, students are two full grades above the national average because they do things like they give them a theme like nails, and then one person makes a chair, another person might write a screenplay. There are students from the ages of like 9 to 15 in the same class. They call them bands. So it depends how experimental you want to be. But if it's a regular school and you're trying to figure out curriculum, I think three times a day for 10 to 15 minutes would be a great way to start.
Well, Eric, good luck to you. I hope that works out. And we're out of time, Dr. Sweeney. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
That was Dr. Sweeney Pillay, neuroscientist and the author of his new book, Tinker, Dabble, Doodle, Try, Unlock the Power of the Unfocused Mind. He was with us today to talk about why letting our minds wander and be a little bit unfocused can help with accomplishing tasks or achieving goals. And you can let us know how you might do this. Do you use it in music? Do you use it in education? Maybe in your day-to-day life when you want to refresh and hit that reset button. Let us know on the Central Time Facebook page.